Hello, and welcome to Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. I'm your host, Robert Washburn. This program is coming to you from the Williams Treaty Territory and Northumberland 89.7 FM. For the next 30 minutes, we will bring you important stories and issues facing Indigenous and non-Indigenous people living here in Northumberland County and across the country. It is your chance to become better informed, more engaged, and empowered as we all move together on the path to reconciliation. So join us for the next step on this journey. Welcome, Chief.
Welcome, and happy 2025.
And the same to you. I want to talk to you about a recent nuclear hearing that took place, and you made a presentation. Now, I understand that the Darlington new nuclear project is a long-term plan to replace the old reactors to build new ones, and it was announced in 2021. It is looking at four new reactors to serve about 1.2 million homes within the existing site. Now, the site is covered by the Williams Treaty, and I understand you and several other chiefs were present recently to give a deputation. Can you tell us, just in an overview, first of all, what you said at that meeting?
Yes. So the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission was holding a hearing into the licensing for the Darlington new nuclear power plant. So they, as you said, they're building four new GWXR300 reactors. So each one of them, that 300 stands for 300 megawatts. And they are the very first ones to be using enriched uranium in Canada, which we know is it's got more power, but it's also, there's a lot more safety concerns and security concerns that we have along with it. So this was the first time Alderville First Nation was at one of these CNSC hearings. So when I spoke, I was going to pretty much wanted to introduce Alderville First Nation to the commissioners, to the CNSC staff, and as well as to make sure we got our messaging correct. So I spoke for about 40 minutes. Sorry, I think it was 49 minutes, actually. So I spoke for quite a long time, but I felt like it was necessary to make sure that they heard our side of the story and what our concerns were.
In your presentation to the hearing, you spent a lot of time providing history and background about all sorts of things, the Alderville, Black Oak, Savannah, your own solar energy project, your cultural background, etc. Why do you feel it was so necessary to provide that background?
Well, I wanted to make sure that they didn't look at Alderville as, say, just another stakeholder, just another village or town that has concerns. I wanted to know how far we have gone as a First Nation for green power. Our solar farm was the largest wholly Indigenous-owned solar farm in Canada. So I wanted them to know that we are about clean energy. We've got a lot of experience in the clean energy industry. And with the Black Oak Savannah, I was really interested in letting them know how much we value our natural landscapes and bringing harmony and balance to the natural elements of the world. So we have, for 25 years, we've been trying to bring back the old species of grasses and all of the flora and fauna that go along with that. So these are just, small bits of land compared to what they're talking about. But I wanted to know how diligent we are for every little acre of land out there. So for them to say, we're taking hundreds of acres and we're going to basically not allow anything to be grown there for who knows generations. I wanted to know how important we hold the land and how important green energy is to Alderville.
The Commission and Ontario Power Generation has consulted with Indigenous peoples elsewhere in the province. What are you worried about in terms of this consultation process?
Well, I guess in the very beginning of this hearing, they were trying to say this is only about the licensing of the first two nuclear reactors that they're going to build. And they didn't want to talk about any of the other issues about nuclear waste or once it actually gets going. So we took a step back and wait, we can't just talk about the licensing aspect and how that should move forward without talking about the whole life cycle of what that means. So one of our major concerns, of course, is the nuclear waste issue. They have no plan for long-term storage of the nuclear waste. They're talking about shipping it up north through Ontario, Northern Ontario, and we're like, we're not sure if we're comfortable with generating nuclear waste here, putting it on the highways, setting it up to another First Nation and having them take it. So to us, that's really not an acceptable solution.
I'd like to come back to that in just a moment. But one of the things you said in your presentation, and I'm going to quote you now, is that the nuclear industry set up shop on our lands that were culturally significant to our people. Yet despite the reaffirmation of our harvesting rights, these lands are now inaccessible to our people. Not only are these lands and waters now inaccessible to our people, but they also now house a potentially significant threat to health and safety of the environment and humans. What do you expect the Commission and Ontario Power Generation to do?
Well, we want, first of all, for them to understand how wrong it had been done in the past. Nothing changed as far as we were concerned, but for them, there was no need to consult with us, no need to inform us, and they felt like they could do anything with those lands. And the nuclear generation sites are on prime shoreline because they need that access to water so that they can keep the reactors cool. So these sites are built on pristine shoreline areas that for us had lots of cultural and social significance, because that's the waters is where we got our food. It was our transportation. It was like the hubs of our society at the time. So to us, these were historic prime lands. So we wanted to make sure that they understood that, how the injustice of the past of taking these lands for what's deemed to be something that we can't ever use those lands for that purpose again. And once the nuclear sites are gone and, you know, they start to remediate those lands, it's still going to be a long time before those lands would be usable for any traditional cultural practices.
This reminds me of a conversation you and I had not too long ago about this notion of duty to consult. How does that concept apply to what you're talking about right at the moment?
Well, this actually was very important during our CNC discussions. So they were saying that these the new Darlington nuclear facilities are basically they're refurbishing old ones. So they're saying this is an old facility. We're just doing like some updates basically, and they wanted to go by the old rules previous to when duty consult became necessary. So we took it back and said, you know what, this is a brand new nuclear generation production facility. So we're considering this to be a new project. And since the last time these came up, we've had this duty to consult. So we were saying, you know, this is a new project and we use the new rules, where the CNSC staff are saying, you know, this is an old project that we're just reworking and we're going to use the old rules. So right off the hop, we weren't seeing eye to eye, and we wanted to make it very clear that things have changed since the last time they did this.
You mentioned just a moment ago the long-term storage of nuclear waste is a concern for you. You've mentioned and described what's got you worried, but what are you looking to see from the Commission, from Ontario Power Generation, in terms of next steps so that you're going to be satisfied with the situation?
Well, we would like to see any action on this, to be honest. So for us, there hasn't even been enough discussion. We would like to see the sitting down at the table, like how we're going to look at this. They're putting a lot of eggs into the basket that they're shipping up north to a community that wants to accept it. So this doesn't really meet our needs as a First Nation. We would like to see it stored in something that there's a real plan for, as well as something that's not going to ship it over vast distances where, you know, if a truck crashes and, gets irradiates an area, like that's, you're just opening up the possibility for these things to happen, because they're going to be constantly shipping nuclear waste, and we really can't afford a nuclear disaster along our highways between Southern and Northern Ontario.
You've alluded a couple of times already in our conversation to this idea of being consulted and integrated into the decision-making process. What does that look like to you?
Well, I think it means a seat at the table for all aspects of the development. So these are multi-year projects, and we need to make sure that we are engaged at the very beginning before anything happens. So we appreciate we were at the licensing hearing, and We just want the CNSC staff to know that a little bit of consultation isn't good enough. We need full free prior informed consent consultation. So we need to know everything that's happening in our treaty territories. We are the rights holders in these territories, so we are not just another stakeholder, and I really can't stress that enough.
Also, in your presentation, you asked for two additional compliance verification criteria. What does that mean?
Well, that's really getting into the nitty-gritty of what we're discussing here. So we were going back and forth with the CNSC staff about what was required. So I think originally we had a lot more, maybe four or five, but then we distilled it down to exactly what we were looking for in terms of getting that compliance criteria out there. So we had our consultation staff across all of the Mississauga Williams Treaty First Nations to get together and say, what really is our bottom lines? So then we came up with those two criteria.
You mentioned also you want to strive for consensus. What are you looking for there? What does a consensus mean in this context?
Well, I guess from a First Nations perspective, we want to make sure that all the First Nations that we are negotiating with OPG and CNSC, we are online with. So we, as a group, we get together weekly and biweekly. We're always discussing. So we want to make sure we're on the same page with each other. But in terms of the consultation with the proponents, we want to make sure we get consensus on terms of the best way to move forward. Because if they say we're going to do this and we don't like that, that's not consensus. So we want to make sure that they hear us and our concerns and that we come to a mutually beneficial path forward.
The well-being of communities and the stewardship of treaties lands is a priority for you. I would like to think that that's pretty basic. So most communities within the affected area would want to make sure that they were going to be safe, and it seems common sense to ensure that environmental concerns are addressed. What is the difference between that and what you're asking for?
Well, for us, any chance of nuclear fallout or things like that, we want to make sure that that's as close to zero as you can possibly get. So that would include the most extreme safety measures possible. Like you need more than just a plan A and a plan B. You'd want fail safes throughout the whole system. You don't want to be taking shortcuts on safety. You don't want to be trying to save some money. Save a little bit of money and maybe just a little bit less safe. Like, we want to make sure that you're maximizing the safety that's within our technological limits.
But I guess what I'm getting at, and I apologize if I wasn't clear, but what you're asking for seems pretty basic. You would think that people living in Pickering, in Ajax, in Curtis, everywhere around that area would share these concerns that you've mentioned. Are you talking to these other peoples that you have these commonalities, or is it what you're doing so completely different and separate that that's not what's happening?
Well, we have been engaged. So we have like emergency planning, safety planning. So all of the communities that are within every single nuclear facility has like sort of a circle of, if you're in the red zone, you probably won't survive. And then it gets out there further. So we're just for Darlington and Pickering, we're sort of just on the outskirts of the last circle. So we would be in the survivability range of a nuclear disaster. But what does that mean? So we know that the iodine tablets will help, not get your body absorbing the radioactive materials. So we want to make sure we are letting our citizens know what to do in the case of an incident. But all these other communities, we're on the same page with them because they have the same concerns. And the closer you are, then the worse it could potentially be for you. So we are all taking those same nuclear safety courses. They're coming to the communities to let us know what needs to be done. But for us being just outside of that circle, we are in a little bit of a better position where we would probably take our iodine pellets and then maybe try to get further away from the site.
But it seems to me, though, that in terms of safety, in terms of environmental concerns, in terms of being consulted and having a chair at the table, all those things we've talked about so far, it seems like there may be commonalities between these other communities and yourselves. And I just wonder, has there been any discussion? Have you called up the mayor of Pickering? or Ajax or wherever and talk to them about, can we do this together? Is that even part of your plan?
We do consult with these other cities for other things, but specifically for nuclear, we haven't. There isn't like a table of communities that that are affected by this issue, and that's actually a great suggestion. It'd be great if we were, able to come up with our own agenda and mandate for community safety, something to get out the word to our citizens. So we do know that they are working on an alert system that goes through the phones. So I don't know if you remember a few years back when everyone got that alert on their phone saying that there was something going on at the nuclear facility, and it kind of freaked out a lot of people. So that was sort of like a test, but they didn't mean for that to go out. But there we are working on things like this to let the community know when something happens. And ideally, we would get some sort of a heads up before it all goes out, so we could, make sure we are ready on our end for a potential disaster.
These projects will create many jobs. What economic benefits do you see for Indigenous people if these projects go ahead?
Well, beyond the construction aspect of it, so these are like multi-year construction things. So we're looking into our own construction ability. So we've been entering into some arrangements to increase our capacity in this, just so that we are able to take advantage of the allocation for First Nation construction companies. So that's something that Alderville, we really haven't been focused on, but it's about time because there's more and more of this happening. But beyond that, for young people that want to get into the nuclear industry, like scientists and technicians, there's a lot of good paying jobs that we could get into. And the more our people are involved in this industry, the more informed we become about the concerns and the risks, and it provides income. So we really want to be involved in the latest technological advances. And nuclear is a great opportunity for our young kids to expand out.
This was a very formal presentation that you did. Were there any informal discussions between the Commission and Ontario Power Generation and representatives of the Williams Treaty people before this?
Well, we consider OPG to be a partner on several different issues. So we had been in discussions with OPG, formal discussions actually, about what a potential arrangement could look like. So we didn't want CNSC to think that, we're all disparate, but we have been working with them. So we actually had to force, to use that word, to force the hand to an agreement of understanding because of our previous discussion. So we do have these pre-existing arrangements with the First Nations. We definitely are always meeting on this issue. So we have a lot of informal and formal meetings on this issue. But in terms of the CNSC commissioners and the CNSC staff, like you can't have any informal discussion because I'm not even sure if there is such a thing as informal discussion because anything you can say really can be used. So our like even when the I guess the chair of the commission, like he said, he came up to meet us at the very beginning of the hearing, but that was slated way ahead of time. He'd think a couple of weeks before, like, well, the chair's going to come up and he wants to meet you and shake your hand, and like that was like that's how they do informal. That, weeks in advance, they're going to informally come up and shake your hand. So it's very strict. Everything is very strict. And anytime you have something like this, you want to make sure you keep all of your information close to your heart. So that's sort of the environment that these hearings happen in.
What is your sense of things going forward? Are you optimistic, pessimistic? Where do you sit on that spectrum?
Well, I'm probably optimistic to a fault on most things. So I'm very optimistic that it's going to be a great benefit to Alderville if we do get an arrangement that we can accept. So our duty as leadership is to make sure we get the absolute best agreement, the most safety criteria involved, as well as make sure that the community's on board with this. So at our community meeting yesterday, I spoke about the whole nuclear issue and how it's going to become a major component of our discussions and even our potential revenue growth in the future. So I want them to be on board with this. We know that it's not clean energy, but it's cleanish energy, much more so than the greenhouse producing gas energy production facilities that are out there right now. So We know that the environment's a major concern, so you really have to balance all of that. We feel that nuclear is better than coal and gas and natural gas burning plants. So we feel that it's a good benefit from a clean energy perspective.
And that community meeting was on Saturday, January 24th. Am I right about that?
Correct.
Now, what are the next steps? What can we expect seeing happen over what timeline?
Well, this was just the hearing for the licensing of the site. So, and that was only for two of the four. So, we expect to see many more. Every time that they're going to have different phases, they'll probably have different hearings. Not all the hearings are going to be like in-person sit-down hearings. A lot of them are just written submissions. So, you'll just submit. So, it all depends on if there's a necessity to have a sit-down hearing, but we find that they are highly productive. And in fact, at one of our recent CNSC hearings that Alderville wasn't at, it was brought to the attention of the commission that they didn't like how it was arranged. So you would have a stage, and all the commissioners were on a stage, and everyone else was sort of looking up to them as they were addressing them. So the First Nation said, "You know, we don't find this to be an acceptable arrangement. We would like it to be in a circle, and everyone's down together, and everyone's equal." So they actually heeded that. And this hearing that we're at, they couldn't do a circle, but we did a square. So we felt that was pretty good. And one of the commissioner staff came up to me and said that they liked that idea so much that they're going to continue doing it, not just for First Nations hearings, but for all hearings moving forward. They feel like the way that they were doing before was outdated, and they've changed their whole format just because of a concern we raised. So we feel like they are listening, they are hearing us. So that's a really good a good development. So we really appreciate that they really seem to be hearing what we're saying.
Recently, a formal press conference was held in Wesleyville, just west of Port Hope, to announce the possible construction of another new nuclear power generation station at that location. It also mentions consultations. Were you at this event?
I was not. So it turns out we were in council the day that it happened. In a lot of ways, you know, that might have turned out for the better, just because we haven't had the fulsome discussion with the community on whether that's they'd want to see their leadership at an announcement like that. So you know, even though we weren't able to attend, it's one of those things that we weren't really quite sure how we should approach this just because we haven't had that fulsome discussion. And OPG has been very good with their communications. They let us know far in advance that this was potentially coming. I think a lot of people knew it was potentially coming, but we didn't know for sure until that announcement had happened. So we were just, you know, we obviously have a lot of concerns because this isn't like Pickering or Darlington. This is pretty much right in our backyard. So the issues are completely different. It's going to be one of the largest nuclear generating stations in the world once it's fully operational. We're talking like a long time before it's actually up and running at full capacity. So we are now at the very beginning stage where we feel like you should be having that consultation. So we feel like that, you know, now we are at ground zero on that, and OPG has done a good job with keeping us informed and opening that engagement process.
What was your reaction when you heard the news at first?
Well, I kind of knew already, so I wasn't surprised. You know, you never know for sure until it happens. So it just for me meant that we need to sit down with the community, let them know this is happening. And I don't feel like I had, because it hadn't been officially announced, how can you have a conversation about something that's not happening until we know for sure it's happening? So now that we know it's happening, we can start those discussions with the community, at which point I would feel more comfortable being able to publicly address the issue, knowing that we have the input from the community.
It's great to say in a press release that there's going to be consultations for you and Alderville. What do those consultations look like? What are your expectations around that?
Well, I can even take it back a little bit further. In the fall, we were invited to the Wesleyville site. We had a great tour. They showed us the ins and outs of the site, the plant that was built in the 70s that was never finished because they put the brakes on it before it even got to that point. So We felt like that was a really good, fully informative idea of what the site is. We walked around the entirety of it. We even went beyond it into like farmers' fields that are adjacent to it. So I felt like that's a really good beginning. But of course, you know, we can't just have one event. You need to have like continuous meetings, updates. We want to know what they are planning before it's announced. So we feel like they've done a good job so far of keeping us posted. We weren't caught by surprise from anything that we've seen. So we feel that OPG is a good partner. They are negotiating in good faith. And we expect that that's going to keep going that way. So we really feel like we've got a good relationship with OPG.
Will this be a consultation with Alderville directly, or will it be with the Williams Treaty representatives again? In other words, is it just going to be between yourselves and OPG, or is it going to be between the Williams Treaties people and OPG?
It's mostly the Mississauga, the four Mississauga Williams Treaty First Nations. So that's Curve Lake, Hiawatha, Scugog Island, and Alderville. So we always meet ahead of time with our consultation staff with the four First Nations. So we want to make sure we're on the same page. And up until this point, we want to always make sure that we have one message. We don't want to have the divide and conquer where, you know, they're dealing with one First Nation who agrees to something and the others don't. So we want to make sure everything we do is locks in step with the other four. So of course there's the three Chippewa First Nations of the Williams Treaty First Nations that even though they're not geographically close to these sites, we still want to make sure we have their buy-in and their input on all this, because the seven Williams Treaty First Nations are a group together. We share a history, so we want to make sure everyone's on board. But the four Mississauga that are close to the sites are the ones that are taking the lead on the negotiations.
You have an important update for us. Now, listeners will recall that the Assembly of First Nations turned down a child welfare agreement worth more than $47 billion because some chiefs and activists felt it was problematic. However, the Ontario First Nations are taking their own actions. Can you explain what's going on?
Yes. So this the settlement agreement had been going on for years, the negotiations. And Cindy Woodhouse, the current national chief, was one of the major instigators on the AFN side as a regional chief. So she was one of the main people that had negotiated this deal. She felt like it was a good deal, but of course she represents the chiefs, and the chiefs as a whole turn it down. But as I previously mentioned, Ontario had a vote prior to the AFN national vote, and we overwhelmingly approved it. I think there's only like six, don't quote me on that number, but it's a very low number that voted against the agreement, meaning that the other 150 or so First Nations were for it. So we're overwhelmingly in support of it. Both Anishinaabe-Aski Nation, which is one of the tribal councils of Ontario, as well as the Chiefs of Ontario, were interveners in the negotiation, and they were the only interveners outside of the AFN and the Crown. So we had a seat at the table. We were directly involved in the negotiations, and we feel like we got Ontario got an agreement that we can work with. So once the AFN chiefs voted against it, then it was sort of dead. So we right away said we want to negotiate as an Ontario region on our own. And then if, you know, the Crown does come up with another agreement with the rest of Canada, that's fine. But we want to make sure that what we agreed to and what we negotiated is something that we can get on the table. So we feel like there's still time left in the mandate of the current federal government that we can complete a Ontario only deal for this. And that's what our goal is right now.
What are the next steps then, now that this has all been set up and things are moving in this direction?
Well, I think you have to get the numbers down just right. So since we've already got an agreement that we can work with, it'll be a matter of tailoring it for Ontario specific. So when you're coming up with the formula for the actual number, do you take the percentage of First Nations on the whole of Canada, or do you take the actual population? Do you take into consideration the remoteness of a lot of the communities versus the non-remoteness? we have arguments that even though some First Nations are closer to, like, say, the GTA, they might be on island, so they are effectively remote. Just because the difficulty of getting goods and services to an island community, they are effectively remote, even though they might be close to a large metropolitan population. So getting out that exact formula, you can't just, you know, say, let's multiply it by 25% or something. We need to know exactly what it would be. We need to know what specific Ontario services would look like. And all of the historical arguments that were made in the national agreement, we would need to distill down to the Ontario only historical aspects. So we need to take that time to tailor it towards the Ontario only solution.
Do you have any public service announcements for us this time?
Yes, I do. So to start off 2025, we have a lot of interesting things coming down the road. But in the short term, on January 30th, we have a community meal and conversation. So that's 5:30 to 7:30 at the Alderville Community Center. And it's going to be a discussion on climate change. And it's going to be hosted by the Peterborough Public Health and HKPR District Health Unit. So I know that this is a really big issue, and I was actually sitting down with a climate change scientist last week, and he painted a very dire picture of not just Canada, but the entire Earth, and how if we don't change things, like right now, we're looking at a really bad story and picture for the world. So we know something has to happen. So this is a really timely event, January 30th at the community center. So if you can make it down and you want to learn more about this, I definitely encourage you to. And also, I wanted to remind the members that every Thursday is Alderville's Men's Drum Night from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Hilltop Wellness Hub. And this is hosted by Aidan Gourviette, who is our cultural liaison worker. And also for the women, on February 12th and March 12th, we have the Women's Full Moon Ceremony. You're encouraged to wear a ribbon skirt or any skirt. If you don't have a ribbon skirt, please bring tobacco and a yellow cloth for the ceremony. And you can contact Yana or Aiden for details about the event. So on February 13th, we are hosting another Kids in the Kitchen. So this is where the kids get to play with the recipes and cook their own food and enjoy it and maybe take some home to mom and dad. So we ask parents to sign their kids up before February 6th. And if you'd like your kid to join Kids in the Kitchen, contact Jill Fanning for more details. And finally, on February 24th is Play and Learn for the youngsters again. So that starts at 10 a.m. And this Play and Learn will be a crafting event, and it's going to be held at the Hilltop. And we ask parents to sign their youngsters up by February 18th if you'd like to take advantage of this event. And that's it for us, but there will be more announcements in the next podcast.
Chief Tanner Simpson, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, no problem. It was a pleasure. I always enjoy our chats.
I want to thank Alderville First Nations Chief Tanner Simpson for talking to me today. I want to thank you for joining our conversation, and I hope you enjoyed this time to learn more about what's going on, the stories and issues facing Indigenous people living in Northumberland and elsewhere. That's all for this week. I'm Robert Washburn. Join us again next time for Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Tanner Simpson.